This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
The following Wednesday, which is the 8th, we'll be having dinner once again. No wonder I've got a weight problem. We'll be having a dinner down at the Latin American restaurant at the corner of Breeze, B-R-E-E-Z-E, and Albion Street in Brunswick. Once again, starting at 6:30 p.m. Food is average, quite interesting, but interesting selection of food. Company, brilliant. So come along and meet like-minded people. Now, the following Wednesday, that's the 15th, believe it or not, the following Wednesday, I'll be doing a presentation at the Footscray Hotel. Now, the Footscray Hotel is at 48 Hopkins Street in Footscray. 6:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. start. Has the 19th of July marks the 90th anniversary of the beginning of the Spanish Revolution. I'll be doing a presentation on the Australians who were involved in the Spanish Revolution, about 75 of them. I'll be doing a presentation on them. I think it's important we remember them because obviously this was the first real battle, physical battle, against fascism. So we will, I'll be talking about that. And on the last Wednesday of the month, yes, the last Wednesday of the month, there are 5 Wednesdays in July, I understand, but the last Wednesday of the month, we'll be having dinner at La Porchetta's in Nepean Highway, Frankston, again starting at 6:30 p.m. Now, the point of having all these activities is to get listeners from around the city of Melbourne, or listeners who listen to the Anarchist World this week who are interstate or in Melbourne during that period, to come and meet like-minded people, have a conversation. And I'd also like to remind people that Denise Hassett, celebration of her life will be on the 25th of July. That's Saturday the 25th of July. I'll give you more details as we get closer to that. And I will be speaking about this in the main program, but don't forget this Saturday. That's right, this Saturday. 3CR's birthday party, 50th birthday party, middle age. Organisers call it a community gathering. Boring. It's a birthday party. Come along, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Meet many of the hosts of the programs of Community Radio 3CR. And I've got a special surprise, which I'll speak about in the main program. Yes, a very special surprise. But the important thing is come along, meet like-minded people, have a chat to people, and I'll be having the Anarchist Marriage Institute table. I'm very interested in interviewing people who've been associated with 3CR, and if you'd like to be on Radical Australia, which we do on the afternoon on Wednesday between 4 and 5 p.m, please come along to the table and we'll take down your details, because what's the point of having all those experiences and all those battles that you've been involved in for them to be forgotten when you move on to the next world, or like me, you go underground somewhere. All right, here we go. The sacred cows have come in. They're dressed in 3CR T-shirts. They're celebrating the 50th anniversary of 3CR. They're all coming along, that's right, to the Collingwood Town Hall this Saturday.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World this week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist World this week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Brainwash minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Welcome to the Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. If you've got any problems with the podcast, don't blame me. Ring up Henrietta. She's doing the podcasts. Now, I'd like to start off with, I have spoken about community radio many times. Now, Community Radio 3CR in Melbourne, which is the radio station I have personally been associated with for the last 49 years, will be holding its 50th anniversary celebrations this Saturday. That's this Saturday. That's the 4th of July. Forget about the 250th anniversary of the United States of America. Come along and celebrate the 50th anniversary for Community Radio 3CR. Big event will be held at Collingwood Town Hall. Collingwood Town Hall, which is on Hoddle Street. Not Punt Road, Hoddle Street, and which is in Abbotsford, not Collingwood. I love that. 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Many of the people that broadcast from Community Radio 3CR will be there. The Anarchist Men Institute has got a stall there. We're very interested. If you're a listener, come along and say hello. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on Radical Australia, which is a program which I also host on Community Radio 3CR, between 4 p.m. and 5 p.m. on Wednesday. I'm very interested in speaking to activists who have, you know, done the hard yards but have been forgotten. Come along and we'll find a spot for you on Radical Australia. It's a 56-minute interview or chat. No commercials, no music unless you play a musical instrument, including your voice. So come along to the Anarchist Men Institute table. Come and say hello. Now, also, we'll be doing a special Anarchist Men Institute T-shirt. Yes, T-shirts, because you may find this hard to believe. The Anarchist Men Institute is an affiliate of Community Radio 3CR. That means we pay our way. And every program, including podcasting, costs the Anarchist Men Institute about $150 a week. That's $7,500 a year. So in order to defray our costs, we'll be selling this new Anarchist World This Week T-shirt. Sizes range from extra small to 3X. So come along, have a look at it. Now, the prices are very simple. $25 unwaged, $35 waged, $50 investors, $1,000 millionaires, and $1 million billionaires. So if there's any billionaires coming along, that would help to solve our financial issues. But importantly, come along to the 3CR 50th anniversary. You're not just going to meet people that are broadcasting now, but there's some of the older broadcasters who've broadcasted for decades. They will be there celebrating that this 50th anniversary. Now, so what else? Oh, yes, the Radiophone. People keep asking me about the Community Radiophone at 3CR. Now, although I told you my total was $20,000, I actually lied. I was actually asked to raise $12,500, and I'd like to thank everybody who donated to Community Radio 3CR via the Anarchist Men Institute, especially Johnny Latte, who made a very, very large contribution over a number of months, and that's what this is about. It's not about just one, you know, contribution at the end of the year. It's about saving your pennies to keep 3CR on air. And we made the total, and the total that we've got to date, and it may increase over the next week or two, the total is $12,549.52. And guess what? I don't get 1 cent of that. Not 1 cent. It all goes to keeping Community Radio 3CR on air for another 12 months. So I'd like to thank all those people who donated to the 3CR Radiophone through the Anarchist World This Week, and that was $12,549.52. Next year will be the 50th anniversary of the Anarchist World This Week. And if I'm still around, and you never know when you get to my age if you're going to be around or not, let's see if we can raise a little bit more to keep Community Radio 3CR on air for some time to come. Now, a bit more serious stuff. well, the community radio 3CR wasn't there, and the community radio network wasn't there, and the community radio family wasn't there because of the efforts of the Whitlam-led Labor government, which gave out community radio licences to community groups to try to break the stranglehold the Murdoch media had on information, the dissemination of information in this country, we wouldn't be there. So I can assure you, current political climate, current political parties are really not interested in having different voices. And we broadcast. We don't podcast. We don't narrowcast. We broadcast to everyone. Now, you may have noticed that multiculturalism is on everybody's some people's lips. Obviously, the leader of the opposition, it's not on his list, but lips. But that's a different story. And why should we worry about losers? That's a different story. Multiculturalism. Now, look, most of my listeners, or most of the listeners of the Anarchist World this week, they're not my listeners. They're not my slaves. But most of the people who listen to, or a significant majority of the people who listen to the Anarchist World this week, would know what multiculturalism is because they're part and parcel of it. When 51% of Australians have one or two parents born overseas, you can understand what I'm talking about. So a lot of people see multiculturalism as some type of, you know, fixed identity that doesn't develop. Now, in a settler colonial society, what a settler colonial society is very simple, is countries like Canada, North America, Argentina, Australia. What happened is the original inhabitants were either wiped out or dispossessed and marginalised. No account was taken of the fact that here in this country they'd been here for over 65,000 years. What happens is when you have an empty landscape and you want to make a buck, you need people. You need people to do the work. And we solved that problem in this country initially through convicts and then through immigration. Now, I'm sure many listeners have been overseas. Some of you have lived there for some time. And the fact is that when you move into a new cultural setting, you don't automatically assimilate. There's historical precedents, language barriers. Now, to me, multiculturalism is the pathway to shared values in a settler colonial society. Multiculturalism is the engine room which creates the ability of a sovereign nation state to find shared values. The first generation, especially if they're non-English speaking or don't have a British background or Irish background, find it particularly difficult, not just in terms of work, but in terms of communication. It's not unusual for people from the same cultural setting to actually live in the same geographical location. Think of Australians when they move to London. The first generation, I'm the first generation, have a foot in both camps. But the foot that we have, if we're born in this country, in the creation of these shared new values, is greater in terms of our association with this country because we're educated in the English language. So you find that the second generation, our children, have in the majority of cases, apart from some isolated situations like, you know, Orthodox Jews, ultra-Orthodox Muslims, Christian fundamentalists, you find by the second generation, and that's 50 years, it's only 50 years time gap, 50 to 60 years, that they have moved from that multicultural milieu to a situation where we have shared values. Now, these values may be positive and they may be negative. And one of the most negative shared values we have with the Australian society is our relationship with First Nations people. And if anything highlighted this, it was the failure of the, you know, the referendum we recently had, a simple referendum which gave First Nations people an advisory role as far as to Parliament, advisory role. And we couldn't even do that. So shared values can be both positive, they can be both negative. But without multiculturalism, where we as a society, because we're a settler colonial society, without multiculturalism, what happens that if you're, you know, you're reliant on immigration, and this country is reliant on immigration, what happens is that you have divisions which are created in society, and these people who are not, there isn't a mechanism by which people can move towards these shared values. What happens is that you have sharp divisions which remain for generations, divisions which are based on oppression and inequality. So anybody who thinks that multiculturalism in a settler colonial society is some type of, you know, throwback, something that's irrelevant, needs to think again. Because in order to create a society with shared values, especially when people come from all corners of the globe, over 195 different nationalities have come to this country since the end of World War II, we will find ourselves in a situation where we're constantly bickering and fighting and divided. And that's no way to create shared values. As I said before, these shared values are both positive and negative. And obviously the most negative that I can think of is the fact that we as a society still have huge difficulties dealing with this country's history. So what's the difference between a colonial settler society, which Australia is, and say a sovereign nation state like Italy or Germany? The fact is that those communities have had hundreds, if not thousands, of years of history behind them via which they have a common language and a common culture. So when people point to Japan and say it is a monocultural society, the fact is there are elements within Japanese society which are excluded to a significant degree. Korean immigrants in between the world wars, Ainu, which are the indigenous people of Japan, which still live on the tip of Hokkaido, the northernmost island. So the issues are, is multiculturalism a value mechanism via which to integrate people into wider society and to create communities where there are shared values? You cannot create these artificially by forcing people to give up, when they arrive in this country, to give up their past. It doesn't work. We saw this with First Nations people when we try to force them to assimilate by stealing their children, by denying them the ability to access their lands. So as I keep saying, multiculturalism is an exceptionally positive concept which to a large degree was enshrined in the Australian mentality by the Whitlam-led Labor government, when they understood that having diverse cultural groups in society where there is no mechanism via which to create these shared values, all it did was increase divisions in society. As I keep saying, multiculturalism is the pathway to shared values in this country. And it's the pathway to shared values in any settler colonial society. Because immigration is as at the basis of any society which has ousted its First Nations people from their lands. It's immigration which creates that settler culture, whether it's the United States of America or Canada or Argentina or Australia or any other settler colonial society around the globe. So it's a different concept. So do we remain divided for all eternity, a division based on where we have come from as people in this country? Or do we create a pathway to create shared values that are based on egalitarian principles? Now, people talk about the fair go. Well, the fair go went out the window in the 50s. But multiculturalism is one mechanism via which to create those shared values, both positive and negative. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. I'm hosting today's program. Let's move on. Now, housing nervous Nellies. I can't stand the garbage. You know, every week I present this program, and it means I've got to listen to other people, read shit, and come to some type of analysis, all right? And I cannot believe the garbage that I've got to go through in order to present this program. Housing nervous Nellies. Now, the federal government has passed some piss weak legislation. It is piss weak in terms of denying investors the ability to manipulate the residential marketplace. The legislation which was passed regarding negative gearing has nothing to do with new buildings, nothing to do with new housing, and it's got nothing to do with anybody who had an investment property before the legislation was passed a few days ago. Now, the whole purpose of this legislation was to ensure that younger Australians were able to break out of the rental market into the housing market, because public housing in this country has been destroyed and privatised to a significant degree. So you either rented or you became a mortgage holder. And in Australia today, one third of people rent, and most of them are young. Not all, but many of them are young, significant majority. One third are paying mortgages, and one third, usually older people, who've paid their mortgage, own their own property. Now, obviously, the whole purpose of removing negative gearing taxation advantages in the housing market was to stop housing prices from escalating. Not because there is a shortage of housing, we're told there's a shortage of housing, but because when you went to buy, well, you and your bank, your friends at the bank went to buy a house, you and the bank were competing against the investor, their bank, and the government, which gave them an advantage. Now, the government's removed from the equation. So investors who rely on capital gains of that house have been pushed aside in the residential marketplace. What that means is that housing prices will drop. They're not going to drop for the $25 million homes or the $10 million homes or the $5 million homes, which only a minority of people can afford, or even the $2 million homes. But they will drop for homes under $2 million. And they will drop, there'll be a greater drop in homes which are negatively geared. So what we will see is an increasing ability of people who are renting, who are working, to move from the rental market into the mortgage market. And you would think that this is a bad thing. The way the media, social media, the legacy media, radio, television, the internet is carrying on about a few percentages drop in housing. Extraordinary. Just extraordinary. It highlights the type of society we've become where the investor, the 8% of Australians who have enough disposable income to invest, have become the barometer. That's right, a barometer about what's important in this country. What about the 30% of Australians who rely on social security benefits to survive, who don't own their own homes, who are renting, who can't access public housing, you're on a 20 to 25 year waiting list? It's just extraordinary, the amount of propaganda that occurs when minor changes are made to this country's economic system. It's not as if, you know, the mineral sector had been nationalised overnight. It's not as if the billionaires are paying 95% in tax on turnover, not income tax. It's not as if they've introduced a stock market, 1% stock market turnover tax, or a GST on financial transactions of over $5,000. These are minor changes to allow more people into a housing market. So if you hear some nervous Nelly crap on about the fact that their house has dropped 5% or even 10%, the fact is, if you want to move, so as the house you're going to move into has dropped 5 to 10%, or the unit you're going to move into if you're downsizing. What a load of crap. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, I am sure everybody listening to this program has been to primary school, haven't you? Now, I went to primary school a long, 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 long time ago, in the 50s. And there's always a primary school 101. You know, you go to university, there's law 101, arts 101. Well, in primary school, there's 101. Amongst boys, mainly. It was a boy thing in my day. Now, if you were a male student in a primary school in the so-called good old days, you understood what a headlock was. And the purpose of a headlock in primary school was to put your sweaty armpit into the face of the person you put in a headlock. So a headlock is something we all understand. You understand what a headlock is? I understand what a headlock is. Every primary school child since time immemorial understands what a headlock is. It used to happen in the program on the primary school grounds during lunch, every lunchtime. So you put your mate in a headlock and you say, smell that, right? Now, let's move on to the Victorian Liberal Party. A Liberal Party that thinks it has won the next state election in Victoria. A Liberal Party who's one of its primary, if not its primary policy, is to tear up the treaty that has been agreed to after years of negotiation between Victoria's First Nations people and the government of the day. A Liberal Party that is going to liquidate, courtesy of our good friend, Mr. Kennett, this state's resources, liquidation of publicly owned resources. These are its policies. Now, one of its luminaries, Mrs. Deeming, who successfully sued and bankrupted the former Liberal Party leader because he made some claims which the court found to be, you know, weren't nice, defamed Mrs. Deeming. It's a bit like me here at 3CR. I don't like the next program or the program before me. Let's pick poor old Kevin. And because I don't like him and we've had a bit of a barney, maybe I put him in a headlock, he's going to sue me, all right? That's me mate. You'd think they could sort it out. Now, Mrs. Dean has gone one step further. Unfortunately, she can't answer because she's gone on a holiday. That's what you do. You go on an overseas holiday when you find yourself in a difficult situation. She claimed that Matthew Guy, two-time loser, that's right, two-time loser, he's the head of the Liberal Party here in Victoria, lost at two state elections, put her in a headlock at a community function. I think it was a Greek Orthodox community function. Now, fortunately, for Mr. Matthew Guy, there was footage of the incident. And it seems that it was a big kind of noisy party. You know what Greek Orthodox parties are like? Big noisy parties that he put his hand on the back of Mrs. Deeming to gain her attention. Right? They were sitting at the same table. Now, Mrs. Deeming thought this was a headlock. I'm not making this up. She made a claim. She made a complaint to Victoria Police that her political colleague, the member of the same Liberal Party, the same united opposition in the Victorian Parliament, put her in a headlock. Now, the Victoria Police, to their credit, found there was no substance to the allegation. Because obviously there was this CCTV coverage, fortunately for Mr. Matthew Guy. Once CCTV coverage has done something positive, right? And he hadn't put her in a headlock. He just tapped her on the back of the shoulder to catch her attention. The type of thing I do consistently, right? Now, Mrs. Deeming had the ability to save herself by offering an apology to Mr. Matthew Guy. I know this sounds like Mills and Boone, okay? Oh, Days of Our Lives, or The Brave and the Beautiful, whatever it is, but this is real shit. This is the opposition party,
that wants to become the government of Victoria, that wants to tear up the treaty, that wants to liquidate this country's assets, that wants to stop the big build, all right? This is that Liberal Party. This is that United Liberal Party.
So she said, well, I'm not to give him an apology. I'll just go on overseas holiday. She's gone on overseas holiday. Now, the current opposition leader, Jess Wilson, now finds herself in a difficult situation. And to her credit, realising that to allow this farce to continue would be political death for the Victorian Liberals, because you can't make this shit up. If I came and made this shit up, you would think I was hallucinating. This is real. This is what's happening in the inner sanctum of the Victorian opposition. So what they've done now is they've put in process in place to remove Mrs. Deeming's, position on the Legislative Council elections. Get rid of the person. Now, I don't care. I mean, this is ludicrous. I don't care. The thing is, she did state that I think she did state that a headlock, she made a mistake, you know, she thought a headlock was something different. Now, as I know, you've been to primary school, you bloody know what a headlock is. You put your mate's head in your armpit and you say, smell of that. I haven't washed for 2 weeks, all right? Okay. Now, the serious part. This is where I'm pissed off. Every day, the Liberal Party tells us that we're in a crime wave. That crime is off the planet. That they need to be elected to put a stop to all this criminal behaviour, right? A little bit like the Queenslanders, the Queensland Liberal Party. Right? We're going to put a stop to all this criminal behaviour. Now, I think this is a frivolous complaint. My belief is that Victoria Police should be investigating Mrs. Deeming for lodging a frivolous complaint and then charging her with that offence. I mean, Victoria Police have better things to do if we're in the midst of a crime wave than wasting police resources and time looking at what is obviously a frivolous complaint. All I can say is the Victorian Liberal Party is the party that gives on giving on. I love them. I love them. So, what can I say? I didn't make this up. I really didn't make this up. This is all true. T-R-U-E. True. Extraordinary. What an extraordinary state of affairs. Couldn't even solve the problem internally. Couldn't even say, sorry, mate, I made a mistake. I thought you had your greasy armpit around my face, but I was wrong. You just tapped me on the back. Sorry, mate. Let's move on. Let's defeat the worst government in Victoria's history. That's what they keep telling us. The what's-her-name-led... comedy. Comedy gold. Comedy gold. What could you do? You can't make it up. Let's move on. Now, I love this one too. Now, the Liberal Party. Yes, it is the Liberal Party's turn this week. The Liberal Party is trying to gain a little bit of traction. Their little friends from Divided Nation seem to be stealing their voters, and they're a bit concerned, and especially their partners, the National Party, who on current figures will have no representatives in the next federal election, are very concerned. So they're trying to get Australians to look at what they consider to be important issues. Taxation. And the mantra for the last few weeks, and it is a mantra, is Australians are poorer because of the evil Albanese-led Labor government. Now, obviously, the Albanese-led Labor government is just a minor reform party. You know, it's about maintaining the status quo. So this is the thing. Australians are poorer. Now, I'm going to tell you why Australians are poorer. And I'm not an economist or a lawyer. I'm just a stupid broadcaster. Now, the Liberal Party gospel, the gospel according to the Liberal National Party, more the Liberal Party than the National Party, because the old National Party, the old Country Party, was an agrarian socialist party, but that's a different story now because the National Party has become an agribusiness party, and that's why nobody thinks they're relevant anymore, especially all those folk who are flowing across to divided nations. So why are Australians poorer? And I agree with the Liberal Party. I agree. Australians are poorer. If you're not part of the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, if you're not part of the 8% that are part of the investment class, who is now having second doubts about investing in residential property because of the changes to government legislation, you are poorer. It's as simple as that. Every statistical indicator over the last 30 to 40 years has highlighted that the gap between the rich and poor is increasing exponentially. For example, the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication have more wealth between them than the working poor and everybody, and that's anybody who earns $1,000 or less a week, and everybody in a social security benefit. So that's 40 to 45% of the population. So why are Australians poorer? We're told by the Liberal Party, or the Liberal Party gospel, the gospel of the Liberal Party, that it's because of the Albanese Labor government's reforms, that it's all their fault. Now, I may be demented and don't remember much about what happened yesterday, but I do remember what happened, what began to happen 50 years ago under the Hawke-Keating Labor government. We saw the introduction of a neoliberal ideology into Australian economics. And the neoliberal ideology was based on the concept that the state has to remove its entry into the private sector. Now, those of you who are familiar with 17th, 18th, and possibly early 19th century history will understand that the state's central role was to ensure that those who exercised power, those who concentrated wealth in their hands, continued to exercise power. And anybody who stood against the monarch's God-given right to rule as they saw fit, would be executed. Very simple, simple concept. That's what the state was about. Now, during the late 19th century and early 20th century, we saw pressure from below. Pressure from below. From those, like we see today, who had been ostracised from the economy by that minuscule minority that ruled by the grace of God, begin to fight back. And we saw reform movements and revolutionary movements, and those reform and revolutionary movements forced the state to take an active role in protecting
its citizens. An active role revolved around not just a vote, but it revolved around providing access to essential services like electricity. A central role in providing people access to healthcare. A central role in providing the children of people access to education. So what we saw is that the state began to intrude. This is, I'm talking about Western parliamentary democracies. The state began to intrude on the sections of society, the private sector, and minimise their profits. So after World War II, into the early 60s and early, late 60s and early 70s, we saw the emergence of a new ideology which was based on pushing the state out of providing services to the community and reverting the state to its original role of protecting those who exercised power. Very simple. And it came in four waves. It came in deregulation. And a lot of people talk about green tape and red tape. Now, obviously, some regulation is a lot of crap. But a significant amount of regulation which has been set up is to protect people from exploitation. It's to protect the community from disease. That's what it's about. But one of the major pillars of this neoliberal, believe it or not, neoliberal revolution was deregulation. Then we had privatisation. As I said before, the state was forced to create special state-owned and state-run institutions to provide its citizens, this is in Western democracies, with the basic essentials of life. Things like social security benefits, things like access to a universal health care, things like access to a public health sector. And the list goes on and on. Things like access to, in Australia, some type of national airline. That's what Qantas was once. Access to telecommunications. So what privatisation was about was selling things like access to banking, the Commonwealth Bank, was selling assets which had been built up through the blood, sweat and tears of generations of Australians and sold at bargain basement prices to the private sector. Now, Mr. Keating, everybody loves to love, sold the Commonwealth Serum Laboratory, which was established, the first national body established in this country by the Commonwealth Parliament in 1910 to provide vaccines and serums to the Australian population at a reasonable price, was privatised for, I think, $2.65 a share. It's now, at one stage, it was worth $300 a share. It's dropped a bit now because of Mr. Trump. But that's, I mean, the Washington Perfume, that's a different story. We had the Commonwealth Bank, which was established, I think, in about 1913, 1914, I could be wrong, by a year or two. It was established to provide financial support to people who could not obtain loans from private banks and to prevent people losing their savings, as we saw over and over again in the 1890s and the early 1900s, when privately owned banks collapsed. And when they privatised the Commonwealth Bank, what that meant is that any break that the private banks had on charging fees was removed. And today, you're encumbered with hundreds of fees, which don't really need to be, so don't really need to be imposed on people. So that's what privatisation was about, was giving back to the private sector. And we saw it going to the aged care sector, the early childhood sector, NDIS. We see it in government departments. When, you know, we've got two Commonwealth Bank employees, well, two employees from one of the big companies, accounting companies, who are in the Commonwealth Bank, being charged because they were looking at the Prime Minister's personal, whatever it is, you know, personal financial affairs, and the list goes on and on. We see it in the Defence Department. 40% of Defence Department employees are not employed by the Commonwealth Government. There are private sector employees that have been put into the Defence Department, and obviously what they're there for is to maximise the profits of those people who provide services and products to the Defence Department. So privatisation was about giving back the ability to make money at the expense of the community to the private sector. Then we had globalisation. I love globalisation. You got a shoemaker here making shoes, and you got to pay him, what, in those days, $15 an hour. You export your jobs to Vietnam and you pay him $1 an hour. Simple. You put designed in Australia, made in Vietnam on your shoes, and we're all supposed to be happy. Corporatisation? Simple. Walk into any mega metropolis temple of consumption. I'm talking about a major shopping centre. The same brands, whether you're in Darwin, Alice Springs, Melbourne, Perth, Unadatta. What corporatisation did is it took the rug out of small business in this country and ensured that they will always play second fiddle to the corporate sector. So here we have the neoliberal revolution. Privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation and deregulation. And who benefited? Who benefited from this? Why are Australians poorer in 2026 than they were in 1966? Why are Australians poorer in terms of the numbers that are finding it difficult to make ends meet, even keep food on the table? Why are Australians poorer? It's very simple. Even a simpleton, an idiot like me, can work it out. And if I can work it out, I understand why the Liberal Party, the Federal Liberal Party, can't work it out. It's not because of some minuscule reforms by the Albanese-led Labor Party. It's about the fact that both the Labor Party and the National Party and the Liberal Party and Divided Nation are all about protecting. That's right. They're all about protecting the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. That's the gospel. That's why Australians are poorer. It's simple. Around the world, people are turning their backs on this neoliberal garbage. But in Australia, we continue to power forward. And no wonder the Federal Liberal Party is on the nose in this country. No wonder. Unfortunately, people are drifting to a party like Divided Nation, which has no solutions to any of the problems. When you have a political party supported by billionaires whose claim to fame is that they want to bring in workers at $2 an hour, you begin to understand the situation, why Australians are poorer. And we'll continue to be poorer while we continue to support this type of garbage. And that's why people have turned off. They don't listen. I may listen because I'm a fool and I need to listen so I can present something on the Anarchist World this week. And obviously my soul is dirtied with all the things I've got to go through, all the garbage I've got to listen to. Luckily, I haven't, you know, bashed my head against the wall because I think it's a bit of a comedy. But the fact is that people have stopped listening. Now, people say to me, well, Joe, why do you continue to repeat things on the Anarchist World this week? Repetition, whether you're talking to the converted or not the converted, is essential in order to maintain pressure. Obviously, if you're involved in a successful campaign, you don't need to repeat that campaign. Now, currently we're involved in a public housing campaign. There's a lot of repetition because that campaign has been going nowhere for some time because of the privatisation of the public housing sector. So repetition is important. Now, a lot of people say, oh, you don't speak about religion or politics. The fact is that I don't care about religion, but if you don't speak about politics to your neighbours and the people you know, and you don't put your ideas forward, nothing will ever change. And that's what repetition is about. It's about pushing until change occurs. For example, Europe. Reality bites. Look at Europe today. In the midst of a summer crisis, people dying because it's too hot. Right? But you see, climate change doesn't exist. Well, reality bites. I believe gravity doesn't exist. I could walk to the edge of a cliff and jump off and I will die because gravity bloody exists. Because you believe something doesn't mean it's real. And that's the dilemma we face today. With asocial media, what we're seeing is an increasing number of people believing the unbelievable. Could you believe that? What a tautology, believing the unbelievable. But reality doesn't care. The climate emergency doesn't care whether you're black or white, whether you're religious or whether you're an atheist, whether you're an animal or whether you're a human being. Because reality is what we face on a day-to-day basis. And to deny reality, to put our heads in the sand, is to ensure that we will continue to suffer the consequences. As I say, reality bites. Gravity exists. Climate emergency exists. And it goes on and on. The 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange, and communication exist. And while they continue to exist, we'll continue to be faced with the same issues we're faced with today. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. If you're in Melbourne on Saturday, the 4th of July, come and meet us at the Anarchist Media Institute store at the 3CR's 50th anniversary celebrations at the Collingwood Town Hall on Hoddle Street from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Come along, meet us in person, have a chat. It's a great opportunity to celebrate the fact that Community Radio 3CR continues to broadcast via the Community Radio Network to thousands of people across this country. It is a great moment for celebration. And don't forget that if you're listening to this program courtesy of the Community Radio Network in one of the community radio stations across this country, knock on their door. Give them a ring. You don't have to donate money. Most community radio stations are short of volunteers. They need volunteers to function. Get involved in your local community radio station because we continue to make a difference to people's lives. We continue to put forward ideas. We continue, as I said before, to be an important part of this country's media landscape. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station. And thank you once again to all those people who donated to the Community Radio 3CR Radio Fund. The Anarchist World This Week raised $12,549.52. Somebody's got a sense of humour, obviously. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station. And see you on the 4th of July at the Collingwood Town Hall, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Meet the people behind the Anarchist World This Week, this Saturday.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.